Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It is now 8:09 here at WCCO. Welcome back. Oh, my goodness. I don't know if you've heard about this, but participating in an intensive early childhood education program from preschool to third grade is linked to higher education attainment in midlife. Now, that's according to a new study by the University of Minnesota researchers. The study was published in JAMA Pediatrics, and it tracked the progress of more than 1,500 children from low-income neighborhoods in Chicago from the time they entered preschool in 1983 and some in 1984 in child parent centers, CPCs, child parent centers, until roughly 30 years later. Now, the children were part of the Chicago Longitudinal Study, one of the longest-running follow-ups of early childhood intervention. Lead author and professor at the University of Minnesota's Institute of Child Development, Arthur Reynolds, is joining me right now to find out more about this incredible study. How are you, Arthur?
Very good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us on a Super Bowl night.
Sure.
Tracking 1,500 children for about 30 years is quite an undertaking. What did you hope to do in that time? Did you think you would succeed?
Well, we thought we had a good chance because we were, you know, collaborating with not only the families and the schools, but the Chicago Public School District. And so we began sort of as an in-house project, and we found that there were some early successes. Children, you know, began school more ready to learn. Parents were more engaged. And so that encouraged us to continue the project, you know, with the Chicago Public Schools. But, you know, without the collaboration, the partnership, you know, we couldn't have done it. But we probably would have stopped if we didn't see some initial, you know, benefits for children and families. But we just kept following and following, and here we are 30 years later, and we're seeing these really large benefits that really contribute to the high sort of return on investment of early childhood is represented by the program.
Who was responsible for following all of these children? Was it the child parent centers that you kept in contact with?
Well, it was, you know, I'm the director of the project, but yeah, it was really the school district and the schools. And so we have the principals, the school district, the superintendent on down, a research team that was originally in the sort of the Department of Research and Evaluation. And then we continued the project as I moved on to universities, you know, my universities, you know, now the University of Minnesota, but there's been other University of Illinois, University of Wisconsin. We all sort of stayed together and collaborated wherever I was, and I had a lot of help, you know, with from teachers and from other, you know, researchers. But really, it's collaboration between me and my team at the university with the Chicago Public School District, and it's been, you know, incredibly successful. And because we had to track and really follow all the sample, and I think, you know, the big challenge in these projects, kind of projects, we have a large sample, over 1,000. It's very hard to track them successfully and to keep them engaged in the study, in the project. And, you know, we followed successfully over 90% to college to determine sort of their college status, their educational well-being, you know, health and well-being in general. And so, you know, that has been very challenging, but the collaboration just shows you how successful it can be if you have a team.
Right. You have to have a team. And that's exactly
Absolutely.
What you guys kind of put together when it came to the parents being involved in this, all the way through the process, making sure that they get involved in the students' learning. And this was really a concentration of math and reading, correct?
Yes, it is. And I think the idea here is that it's engagement of the whole family and the child in the early learning process, you know, beginning in preschools, having the right track, you know, learning your letters and numbers and, you know, but also, you know, engaging with other children, you know, peer relationships, you know, sort of control your emotions, get along well with others, follow rules. All those things really enhance the value, you know, of education that that children feel, that families feel. And so you're really reinforcing, you're just enriching the experiences that the children probably already have to some extent, but you're just sort of accelerating, I think, their progress and also, you know, providing sort of an outlook and a skill level that just that would go beyond what you would normally have, what would normally be the enrichment. And so I think that those early successes, they sort of snowball. One success leads to another, and here, you know, it gets to third grade, and kids are sort of reading on grade level. They're sort of meeting all the teachers and school's expectations, and they're feeling really good about themselves, and that just kind of continues. It accumulates, and we see that 30 years later, kids are more likely to grow up, graduate from high school, but also have higher rates of, you know, college graduation, either an associate's or, you know, a bachelor's degree, you know, when they're in midlife. And so that's real exciting, but it's kind of the snowballing of effects mm-hmm. over time that we see that start very early. And it's important that it starts early because I think the size of the impact and the length of time that you see the effect is going to be greater, and that's what we found as well. But we also found that it wasn't just preschool. It was really the kids that have the greatest outcomes later are the ones that had continuing services. So they had smaller class sizes in kindergarten, first, second, third grade. They had a really strong curriculum that would take advantage of the reading and math skills that they learned earlier, have the emphasis on parent involvement. So if they got from 4 to 6 years of this program, through third grade, sort of P3 is what we like to call it, that gave the greatest effects.
Right. So what you learned is basically what we've already known, but we didn't have the proof. We didn't have, we couldn't see it in writing. We didn't know for sure if the outcome would be graduation with an associate degree or a bachelor's degree and beyond. And so now that you have this solid information, what do you hope we will glean from that and what will happen with it?
I think the surprise is sort of the size, the longevity effect. I think we all of us as parents or as teachers, we expect to have impacts on children and their families. Sometimes we don't know what the magnitude of that impact is, and so I think the purpose of research, scientific research like this, is you try to isolate to make sure you know it's the program that's causing these changes and not something else. But we didn't really know what the size of the impact would be, and so it was quite important from a research perspective to really understand that. But what I think now, we know the size of this impact. And we know, you know, it's kind of generalizable, certainly to kids, you know, at risk in large urban areas and other areas, that I think it's a priority. I think we need to increase the priority, given the size of the impact and the length of the impact. We need to prioritize highly effective, you know, early childhood education that has the same elements as the Child Parent Center program. But in addition, we need to also make sure that the continuity that kids are going into school systems, going into, you know, communities after preschool where they can have those reinforcing gains through, you know, a strong, you know, teacher, you know, buy-in, but also strong parent involvement and really small classes, all the elements of the program as well. And so it's really an engaging learning environment, creating this culture. You know, it takes 4 to 6 years. And so I think the priority of schools to really prioritize for funding and to make sure that the programs that are being implemented, you know, have the same kind of effectiveness as what we find in the child parent centers. And that really, you know, involves things like smaller classes, making sure that teachers have bachelor's degrees and have a lot of support for their learning, for their own learning, certainly it's a strong curriculum that's, you know, evidence-based, really a focus on kind of the whole child and, you know, learning both in sort of the, quote, basic skills, but also in, you know, social-emotional learning, that continues for many years and that there's a kind of a learning environment that mm-hmm. is created in the school and also in the family that reinforces that, you know, over extended period of time. That's going to take more resources than is currently available and is currently prioritized. And I think this sort of example, exemplar, really shows, I think, the way to take the next steps and to make sure that we have these smaller classes, we build these learning environments and supports for families. And it's not just in the classroom. It's, you know, certainly supporting teachers and their helpers or assistants, for example, but also engaging families to want to participate and engage in learning in the school or at home, a combination of those things over many years. And so that's going to take higher priority, but also a high, you know, sufficient or funding levels that are proportionate really to the impact that we can see.
Out of the 1,500 students, these children were broken up. Many of them were involved in the child parent centers, and then about 550 of them were not. They were involved in other child early childhood intervention programs. And did you find that they didn't do so well? And if they didn't do so well, how do you feel about not choosing all 1,500 of them? Because we know that we have evidence that these children have not been graduating. They have not been going on to college. So why not take all 1,500 of them and put them in this sample?
Well, the idea was that we were trying to compare in sort of like a natural experiment here. So kids that are already in the child parent centers and they're maxed out, and so there's 1,000. There were no more slots available for these children, you know, once we started in these 20 schools, and these 1,000 kids were in the 20 schools. So the other 500 kids were children in other schools that were sort of randomly selected that were participating, you know, in the usual sort of early childhood programs. I mean,
right.
Some of the kids have Head Start programs. Some of them had, you know, the district had their own program here that provided like full-day kindergarten. So the idea is that we were maxed out so more kids couldn't be served in the program. And so to be able to determine what the impact was, well, we compare them really to the existing kind of program that's already available so we can determine, because at that time we really didn't know what the impact was. So we had to do this comparison of kids that were in the child parent centers versus those that were equally eligible, but they were just in another program that the Chicago Public Schools ran. So that was really provides information that really gives us the most valid information, because we're not comparing kids that just have a program, child parent centers, to nothing. They're just in home care. But these children got really in the comparison group, so to speak, got a significant amount of intervention. In fact, in kindergarten, really got a lot of equivalent services that the kids in the child parent center did. And so, mm-hmm. So our findings in some ways, and maybe are conservative, that we would have gotten even larger, even better findings if we were comparing kids that were in home care or were in services that were very minimal, but that wasn't the case. And so in the end, it strengthens our the findings, because you know, it's likely that they're conservative, and you know, it also provides, you know, evidence now that kids that are getting intervention services now, whoever you're comparing it to, they're also getting services. You know, kids in preschool programs, mm-hmm. you know, today, I mean, almost all families are enrolling their children in preschool, and so you can't really find any comparisons that are going to have no services. And so our study is, because of the way we designed it, it's even more relevant today, and it has even more implications for actual practice in schools and states than other studies, because it's really a strong design, but it's also comparing, you know, an intervention to something that kids would normally get, not nothing. And so it's sort of a more realistic comparison, or a more realistic study. And it also, because of just the scope and the scale of it, we're following 1,500 children, that it's a big sample, and so it tends to be more confident. We can be more confident that the findings are true, certainly more valid than if it was a smaller scale study, or if there are other kind of oddities, mm-hmm. you know, with a very small sample that may not be very realistic to be able to match it to some other sample.
And finally, you started this in 1983, sir, and the child parent centers have now expanded since then to Minnesota, Illinois, and Wisconsin. Where to next?
I think, we focused on kind of the Midwest, so I think, you know, maybe Michigan, but I think as well, or other, states, but I think it's really up to, you know, whatever states or districts or schools are interested, you know, we're interested in, you know, collaborating. And I think in Minnesota, you know, for example, you know, I've worked with St. Paul Public Schools, but also Rochester, Minnesota Head Start programs, and in Rochester, it's beginning some collaborations in Minneapolis. But I think the idea here is that, and we have a lot of resources available on our website, you know, cpcp3.org, that allows any district or state to begin to engage in the ingredients or the elements of the program that they could kind of sponsor. But I think we've started in the Midwest, and I think we'd like to, you know, certainly expand, but certainly the resources that are available that any school or district or state can examine and go on to our website and see resources. And there's a manual for the program. There's technical support. There's a whole bunch of resources that we're happy to share with and provide, you know, some insight into how this could work in a particular district.
Could you give us that website one more time?
CPCP3.org.
All right. Professor Reynolds, thank you so much for taking time to be with us tonight.
Nice to be with you, too.
All right. Again, that is Professor Arthur Reynolds, and he is professor at the University of Minnesota's Institute of Child Development. If you want more information, just go to CPC for Child Parent Center, CPCP3.org. Quite a remarkable study. And I have to tell you, it when I initially read about it, read as much as I could about it, I was quite surprised, and I think what touched me the most was the success of the 989 graduates of the Chicago Public School District's CPC program, and just hearing about the program and how it provided the intensive instruction in math and reading from preschool to third grade, and how all of that made a difference and got them not just to graduation, but also got them to either an associate degree or a bachelor's degree, really moved me. What saddened me are the 550 children who didn't get that opportunity. I will be looking into child parent centers more and finding out more information and hoping to bring that to you very soon. Or you can learn a whole lot more from cpcp3.org. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. It is 8:28 here at WCCO. Welcome back. Oh, there's so much going on, but we've got a lot of great guests tonight. Coming up next will be the interview for Jimmy Jam Harris and Terry Lewis, the super producers that have been in town, responsible live stage that was downtown on 8th and Nicollet. I'm telling you, it was really just quite remarkable how many artists were involved in that from the 26th of January all the way through today. There was one act on that stage today, and I believe it was at 1 o'clock. And now that stage is going to close down, and they're probably just disassembling it as we speak, but it just was a remarkable time. And so we're going to have to take a break and come back. But when we come back, we taped two pieces with the two super producers, and I am so excited to present that with you. They came in studio right here at WCCO and took the time out of their very busy schedules to talk with us. So stay tuned.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You're listening to Steel Talk, and I am your host, Geralyn Steele. And as you know, I've been talking about this all night. I am so excited to have with me two people I've known for a while, since the 90s, and they mean so much to us here in the great state of Minnesota. So you know that Verizon stage, right? Super Bowl Live, it's called. Well, the reason why you see so much incredible talent on that stage is because of the super producers sitting in front of me. We have Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis in studio right here at WCCO. Welcome to WCCO, you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I should say welcome back. Jimmy, you have been through these hallowed halls many times.
I have been.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a pleasure.
It's good to see you both. Well, okay. First of all, a lot of people have been asking me, why did we decide to really showcase Minnesota talent? In fact, someone asked me, do we still have enough now that Prince is gone? I was a little stunned by that, maybe even a little offended. What would you say to someone who would ask you that question? Jimmy?
Well, we certainly have enough talent, as shown by, you know, 10 nights of concerts, you know, and most of it locally, homegrown talent, or if not homegrown, certainly having a connection with Minnesota. But I think that you know, Prince's reach and his scope and his influence, is so, it's undeniable, you know, And so to come back here and really celebrate all the greatness of Prince and everything that he's done, but then the people that have been influenced by him, which I think probably count as pretty much everybody on the bill, you know, it's a perfect place to do it. And it's a perfect time to do it while the eyes and the ears of the world are on Minnesota.
And thank goodness that they are. And Terry, you know, our tentacles in Minnesota go far and deep, in fact, right?
Far around, reach around the world.
Reach around the world. And so now that Prince has left us and you guys left and went to California, first of all, when you left and went to California, did you feel like it was the right decision? Once you were there 6 months, a year, 5 years, what did you think?
Well, it was an industry shift. At one point, we lived in California, and we made, after we got our career established, we made a decision to move back to Minneapolis because we felt we had enough power to bring people here, and people loved the idea of coming here. And then things changed economically, and the industry kind of shifted, and there were less and less budgets that people could travel and live. So we said we have to kind of go where the industry is, and we made the shift to move to California. Just is a business move.
Oh, of course. And we understand that. We're not blaming y'all for anything, trust me. I think for us, though, when you come back, it means a lot to us for you to know how solid the music industry is here. And when you came back, I know you expected it. You knew what was happening here, but were you surprised at anything? Was it better than you expected? Was it all that you expected, Jimmy?
For me, it's been great because it's been a combination of obviously people who have been around who are still around. Like, for instance, we put together the whole pretty much Flight Time alumni back together the very first night along with Cynthia Johnson, the verse and, you know, the voice of Lip Sync. But before she was the voice of Funky Town, she was the lead singer in Flight Time. So we were able to do that. But then we were also able to have a bunch of new bands and a bunch of new talent come out on, you know, all the different nights on the hip hop night and so on and so forth. So I think it's a mix of people, and I think it's a vital community. I think growing up in Minneapolis for me was always about the arts, and whether it was the Guthrie Theater, a Penumbra Theater, Children's, whether it was the Institute of Arts, whether it was the Walker Arts Center, whether it was the Minnesota Orchestra, you name it. And then, you know, you have Sounds of Blackness, you have yourselves. You know, these are like institutions that we grew up with. And so you figure that that legacy is going to carry on, and to no surprise, it seems like it is.
And it's far more diverse than it probably was before you left, right, Terry?
Well, it was really diverse when we grew up here. I mean, music has always been diverse here, and I think that's what makes Minneapolis music so great. We all root for each other, you know, all the rock bands. I know a lot of the guys in the rock bands. You know, I know you guys, the Sounds. My brother was in the Sounds originally, and back in the days at McAllister.
Really?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it goes that far back. You know, they were together 30 years before we even discovered them. You know, it's like Columbus discovering America, right?
Right, right.
So, I mean, just discovery with, like, new talent, of course. But pretty much you know what's here. It's so diverse, and it's so just prevalent. It's just everywhere. It's in the walls. And in booking the acts, I mean, I didn't have enough time. I couldn't book enough. I mean, it was too much. So it's like new acts that are out there and local acts that are amazing as well.
Older acts, younger acts.
Exactly. Yep. I couldn't find enough space for it. There's only so much time and so much budget.
When you talk about budget, of course, approaching or the Super Bowl committee is, to hear them say it, it's like you guys were the angels that walked in the door, right? Because they feel like what you brought to the table was far more than what they thought. And I am so grateful that you did that. Why did you do it?
We felt everyone deserved a chance to be a part of this. I mean, this is our chance to show the world and give a good expose of our talents here. And at the same time, pat ourselves on the back for what we've been able to share with the world. I think the number of acts that we were supposed to book from the beginning was 8. And we ended up with over 40.
I think we overachieved.
Yes.
The other thing for us is that we've been to enough big events. We've been to Super Bowls. We've been to All-Star Games. We've been to different events in different cities. And what always tends to happen is you know, the people that come in with the sponsorships and the whole thing. You have those people get to have a good time. You have the $1,000 a ticket concerts, and those people get to have a good time. But the community never feels a part of what it is. Mm-hmm. It's like the Super Bowl's in your town, but you don't feel a part of what it is. So this was an opportunity to do something for free, do something in a time period between like 4 o'clock and 9 o'clock at night where families could come down and get together and listen to some great music, maybe come down and hear something that you want to hear, but then stick around and hear something you haven't heard before. So it gives you a chance to introduce you to new music or whatever. And that opportunity to bring the community together for free in downtown Minneapolis and make everybody feel a part of this kind of Super Bowl celebration,
right?
That was important to us.
Right, and not on the outskirts, but really right in the perimeter.
Right,
We're right there, exactly. You know, being a part of it all. And it's amazing because it's changed so much over the decades.
Mm-hmm.
We all know back in 1992 what the halftime looked like here in Minnesota, right?
Yep, yep.
And we also know who was happening and doing what we do in the 90s as well. But before that, they would only use local talent for anything. And so, you know, then they started using all the national talent, and then all of a sudden, there was no local talent.
That's
and now
right.
we're starting to see it makes sense where both of them, you showed us here in Minnesota, that both can live in the same moment.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Right. Yep. Now what? Because we don't ever know if the Super Bowl will ever come back again, right? And now that you've seen what the Twin Cities has to offer, the new and up and coming, the older groups, and it's been like old home family, you know, it's like connecting with everybody. And I know you've probably heard that before, but it has been wonderful. And that's the one thing when you guys were living here and in the midst of it all, everyone is saying it's like coming home. So not only did you bless the Twin Cities, you know, those fans and those people that are coming from out of town and saying to us, you know, saying to them, look at what we have. Look at who we are, because you still know that you are we, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But you also awakened us in the music industry as well. Some of us are actually saying, oh, my gosh, I had this amazing opportunity. What's next? What's next? What's next? And it changes someone's trajectory. When someone as powerful as you are, walk into the room and say, you're valued.
Thank you. That's nice.
Knowing that, that's a lot of power. That's a lot of power. Whether you're in Minnesota, whether you're in Los Angeles, no matter where you are in the world, that's a lot of power. And yet you both seem very comfortable with it.
We feel very honored and very privileged and very blessed to be given this wonderful platform to spread music throughout the world. And to really take the best of Minnesota, the best in Minneapolis, and spread it throughout the world. And know that everywhere we go, I mean, we had the chance this past year to spend time in Korea and go, like, to the DMZ, where North and South Korea are battling, and write a song called Korean Dream that was asked that the Korean, the South Korean, and the World Peace Foundation asked us to write to try to be the soundtrack for peace between and reunification between the two countries. So, you know, Trump has his way of doing things. We have our way. Our way is through music and trying to be the soundtrack for unity and love. And what an incredible honor and what a divine thing music is, because it truly touches the heart. It touches the soul. It knows no language barrier. You know, so that's what we look at it like a responsibility, and we absolutely love doing it, and we feel so privileged to be able to do it. So, yes, we are very comfortable in it. I mean, we won a song. We got inducted in the Songwriters Hall of Fame this past year. And rather than feeling like it's the finish line for us, we feel like it's the starting point for the next level of what it is we can do and what it is we can bring to people.
You're listening to Steele Talking. I am your host, Geraldine Steele. We're going to take a break, pay a few bills, and in studio with me, we're coming back with Jimmy Jam Harris and Terry Lewis. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Steele Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. As you know, we have our guests in studio, Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam. I'm so honored to have you both in. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, Jimmy, before we left, you were talking about Korea. And I went to South Korea to the DMZ zone, right? And I even walked down a couple of those stories into the ground.
We did that.
Seriously,
too.
Did you do that too?
Oh, my God.
Oh, honey, it was, I was wore out.
I was, oh, my God, I didn't think I was coming back.
Like, can somebody come get me?
I was like, who let me go down here?
Seriously, not smart for me. I know that's right.
No.
So after I got my bones together and came out of it,
yes.
right, I have to tell you, that whole trip really changed me,
mm-hmm.
right? When I went to Moscow and Sochi,
yep.
changed me.
Yep.
But that particular trip, because you really understand there's a clear line drawn between freedom
yes.
and not.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. What's in between is like untouched land.
So, yeah, so untouched
it's,
land.
Right? It's right. untouched. It's mm-hmm. beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's one of the beautiful, most beautiful places on earth to me. So, yeah, it's just, it's amazing the journey that music has taken us on. And the fact that when we go there, we also went to the Philippines. We did a big K-pop concert in the Philippines.
I love
we
K-pop.
Did. Yeah, we do
Shiny.
Too.
Shiny.
Yep.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I love me some K-pop.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. we did that. We got to speak at the United Nations last year. That's a thing that music has allowed us to do. Went to Japan. We go to the UK. You know, and people know us, and they know Minneapolis. And they, you know, it's a tremendous, like I say, it's a tremendous responsibility, but it's even a bigger, just a privilege to mm-hmm. be able to represent, you know, Minnesota and Minneapolis music and that. And we're just so honored to have the chance to do that.
So you go for the inspiration, I know. You're hoping to be inspired, right? But definitely once you've been changed from the inside out, then does it change the way you write?
That's a good question.
That's a great question.
I don't know if it changes the way. Well, it would change the way you write because it changes the way you think.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it changes the importance in the responsibility. I think you feel a little bit more responsible because once you know, you can't unknow about something. So with the Korean thing, that changed a different perspective. I did a lot of studying about why it was and what it was mm-hmm. and had a better understanding of why a single nation gets broken into two nations by people who have nothing to do with either nation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's an amazing thing. So, you know, can't always believe what you hear. You have to study to show thyself approved.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. They'll say that you are only as good as the last thing that you did. And if this is the last thing that you did today, what is it that you hope people will know?
Hmm. Boy, these are two good questions here.
Yeah. They say, I always say you're only as good as the next thing you do.
Yeah, right.
Right.
But what if there is no next
thing? There's no next thing. Well,
wow.
I have to lay down with this one.
Yeah, exactly.
But what would you want people to say about this one thing and about you and your participation in this one moment right here in the state of Minnesota? Super Bowl 52.
I would just, I guess for me, it's just, I want people to know how important, you know, growing up here and calling this home is. And I think we felt that this whole week anyway. People have made us feel so at home. And I think, I can tell you for me personally, like when I'm in LA or I'm in other places, I'm not thinking about that people are in Minneapolis actually going, oh, I wish they'd come back or I wish they'd come home or that. But literally from the minute like we hit the airport, it was like everybody was like, welcome home, welcome home. And it's interesting because I'm sure people probably think we hear that all the time, but we don't. But we can't hear it enough, you know. So for me, I just hope people know how genuinely, I guess, honored we are to be here and to do what we do and know how much love we have for this place and for the people of this place, because that's
yes.
really what it's about.
And definitely the music scene
mm-hmm.
That we would, we feel honored to just participate in this music scene. I mean, we don't, these are my peers. These are mm-hmm. not like any thing else but peers. These are people that I love, and you know, I want to embrace them all the time. You know, when I see you, I just want to give you a hug and just let you know that I love you, and you know,
mm-hmm.
I appreciate you.
And that's how you've been since you've been here. That's exactly how you've been. Even though I have never had my feet under your table, Jimmy Jam, and I've never had my feet under your dinner table, Terry, please know you are family to us. All the Steels told me to tell you they love you. Hello, how you doing? And we'd love to see you in this city more often. Anytime you stop through, you are welcome in the hallowed halls of WCCO Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Steel Talkin'. Super producers in studio with me, Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam. What a joy for Geraldine Steel on Super Bowl Sunday 52.
Yeah.
We'll be back in a moment. It is now 8:52. Let's make that 8:53 here at WCCO. I cannot tell you how much of a joy that was to interview those great producers. And it's amazing how many artists we have turned out here in the Twin Cities. When we talked about those tentacles of Minnesota go deep and wide, it's amazing how many actors have left the Twin Cities and gone out to California and New York and made it big. Producers, musicians, and so many more. Those that have started businesses that have now moved into other states, that sort of thing. So we have this incredible Genesis program. You know, this is where it begins for those who, many who were born and raised here, and they get to move out and show the rest of the world, you know, who we are as Minnesotans and what we can accomplish together. There are musicians like myself who have moved to the Twin Cities and were received with open arms many years ago. Since 1978, I've been here nearly 40 years now. In fact, 40 years this year. And you think about that, and you say to yourself, you planted another life. In fact, I've been here far longer than any other place I've lived. And I think to myself, what a great place. What a great place. And I'm so grateful for everyone under the sound of my voice tonight who has been integral in the changes in my life, the successes in my life, and giving me, you know, critical or have critiqued me in ways that have been critically important to my life. Thank you for that. And it's not just me. It's so many other musicians. And when we all come together and we express the joy of being in the same room together, that's a beautiful thing here in Minnesota. There are not many states that can boast when all of the top musicians or the top singers, the top actors in town all come together and you're backstage together, that you can actually have wonderful conversations, share in wonderful times. I cannot tell you how many times I have sat with the Peterson family or Debbie Duncan and Gwen Matthews and Cynthia Johnson and Yolanda Bruce and Ginger Commodore and my sister Javita and I and all of us sitting together just talking about, oh man, you know, who's performing next? Where do we go? Do I need to, you know, how's that going? How do I get tickets? Where do I go next? Or people constantly collaborating. This is a big town for collaboration. And as you heard those super producers talk about what it's like to come home, these are the peers. That's something we don't tend to forget when we leave, come and go from this great state. Now, although I'm a Hoosier, born and raised in Indiana, being here for 40 years, I do feel like a Minnesotan in so many ways. So thank you for taking me in. You know, adopting the Steels as part of you. It's been really quite a remarkable ride. Coming up next is Center Stage. All things arts and entertainment, we just believe you ought to know about it. And who are we talking to tonight? Well, we are really excited to talk to Rohan Preston, lead theater critic over at the Star Tribune. We are also excited to talk to Rod Cates. Now, Rod is the brand new artistic director of the Ortway Center for the Performing Arts in St. Paul. He is actually walking into the big shoes of James A. Rocco. He took his place. And I've got so many questions for him. I mean, this is his big time over at the Ortway to continue their mission. And I can't wait to find out how that's going to be done. And that's going to happen at the beginning of the hour. Also, Judy Dennehy-Venner, she is joining me tonight. You've heard of her. She's part of the season 10 of Legends at the Capri Theater over North Minneapolis. By the way, this particular series has become so successful. I've had a chance to only go once, and I so enjoyed it, and it sells out, and people do a great job. So I can't wait to tell you and introduce to many of you and present to others Judy, because she's going to talk about her show and what's happening starting on February 10th, so you don't want to miss that. And then, of course, we are going to talk to someone I have never met before, and his name, this is at 9:50, by the way. This is the last interview for the 9 o'clock hour. His name is Dave McElroy. And what is happening to Dave McElroy, who lives in Elko? I can't wait to tell you about it because he is on his way to Music City and has a really great opportunity in front of him. So I'm looking forward to that as well. And then, of course, at 10 o'clock is the Mom and Michael Hour with my son, Michael Battle, from Los Angeles. Yes, it is my favorite hour. I love reconnecting with my son every week, and I'm so grateful to CCO for allowing that to happen. We are only on, though. It's a truncated show tonight. We are only on from 10 to 10:30, and we are looking forward to bringing you that half hour. But after that half hour happens, the Super Bowl recap is going to happen. Five staffers from WCCO were actually at the Super Bowl game tonight, and we're going to chat with them for a few We're gonna hear from them, I should say. They're going to start at 10:35, and so you do not want to miss that half hour. We've got Sloan Martin maybe even joining us in studio, Steve Thompson, Eric Nelson, all three of them will be joining us, as well as two others, we hope. And they're just going to recap the whole night, and I can't wait to hear, as I'm in the studio, I can't wait to hear what they thought about Justin Timberlake, and what a game tonight. We should probably give you an update. Brendan, can you tell me the update tonight on the game?
Eagles just scored. They are currently up 38-33.
They
are reviewing the touchdown. It looks like it will stand. So as far from my perspective, good guys are now winning.
Wow. 38-33 in favor of the Eagles.
Correct.
Wow.
Can we both get to 40 tonight?
That would be remarkable, right?
Really would. These are two good defenses.
I know. That's incredible. My goodness. We didn't see that coming. We thought during halftime they were going to go and Brady was going to come out and do his magic. But, boy, I tell you, the fire in the belly for the Eagles is it's working tonight. How about that? Man, I wonder what will happen if the Patriots lose. Oh! Should I give it a thought?
She said it out loud.
Should I give it a thought? We'll be back in just a moment.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.